This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Good morning and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Well, it all started when 14-year-old Hannah Salwin had a eureka moment. She was in her neighborhood and she saw a homeless man at the exact same second that a glistening Mercedes pulled up. And she said to her dad, "Hey, you know, if that man had a less nice car, that man there could have a meal." Until that day, the Salwins had been caught up like so many of us in the classic American dream, providing a good life for their children, accumulating more and more stuff and doing their part, but not really feeling it. So when Hannah was stopped in her tracks by this glaring disparity, her parents knew they had to act on her urge to do something. As a family, they made the extraordinary decision to sell their Atlanta dream house, downsize to a home half its size, and give half of the sale price to a worthy charity. What began as a rather outlandish scheme became a remarkable journey that transported them across the globe and well, well out of their comfort zone. In the end, they learned that they had the power to change a little corner of the world, and they found themselves changing too. In today's show, we're going to talk about how to go from taking to giving back. Of course, we don't expect you to give away half of everything you own, but there is still plenty that each and every one of us can do to help make the world a better place for others and, in the process, for ourselves.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
I'm 4 years old, and I'm the only one in my whole class that can tie his own shoes.
My mom took me to the circus for my birthday. Half my friends already went, but now I've gone too.
Most kids make fun of me because I still believe in the tooth fairy. But I got $5 yesterday. I believe.
A third of the kids in my eighth grade class drink alcohol regularly.
Over 99% of my class has been offered illegal drugs. Half of my college classmates binge drink, abuse drugs, or do both. But the frequent dinners I had with my family have helped make sure I'm not one of them.
Go to CasaFamilyDay.org. Take the Family Day Pledge and get tips on how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. Have dinner with them often, and you can significantly lower their risk of substance abuse. Dinner makes a difference. A message from the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of the show is Kevin Salwin, who's the co-author with his daughter Hannah of The Power of Half, One Family's Decision to Stop Taking and Start Giving Back. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Armin.
Tell us a little bit about how this whole idea, actually you should tell us what the whole idea is. First of all, I have to say I was introduced to you by an old girlfriend of mine who said she just heard of your situation. It was basically your daughter was kind of trying to figure out a way of doing some contribution to make the world a better place and came up with a really unique idea.
Well, it was she had a moment of epiphany when she was 14. This was back in the fall of 2006, and I was driving her home from a sleepover, and we pull up at a very familiar stoplight, and she looks to her left, and as is often the case at that light, there is a disheveled man at the corner. He's got a sign that says, "Hungry, homeless, please help." You know, the kind of thing we had seen.
Kind of thing you drive right by every day.
Oh, my gosh, all the time, right? And so had she. And so... This time, though, as we're sitting there waiting for the light to change, this beautiful black Mercedes pulls up on our right. And Armin, I keep these, I keep McDonald's Arch cards or other food cards in my glove compartment, right? This way I can give homeless people a meal or the opportunity to get a meal, right? And so I'm looking around and I'm trying to find a card and I can't find one. And I'm thinking, should I reach into my wallet? Should I give the guy a buck or two? And I'm thinking, no, I shouldn't do it. Well, over in the passenger seat, Hannah's having a completely different experience. And what she's wrestling with is, you know, if that man over there in the Mercedes didn't have such a nice car, that guy could have a meal. Right? And she's toggling back and forth between the two. And I said, well, and so she says this out loud to me. And I said, well, Han, you know, if we didn't have such a nice car, he could have a meal. But then what happens the next day? You know, and so the light changes. We head home, and Hannah's angry. She's angry at herself. She's angry at our family. And she can't wait till dinner to talk about what she just saw. And finally, you know, in a moment of frustration of listening, after listening to this, my wife says, well, Hannah, what do you want to do? You want to sell our house? You want to give up your room? And
that was the dangerous moment right there.
It was a very dangerous moment. And, you know, you'd never dare a teenager, right? And so that's what she said. Her face brightens, Hannah's face brightens, and she says, yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. So that is what our family decided to do. You know, we calmed down a bit from that emotional moment, but we, as we went through this process, we figured, okay, let's do it. Let's see what happens. And so we did. We sold our big, beautiful house. What this, by the way, is a house that my wife would always refer to as her dream house. Moved into one half the size, and we gave away half the money to try to fight poverty in the world.
Now, had your daughter or you or your wife seen Pay It Forward?
My daughter has. Yeah, we all have.
Okay. Now, I'm just kind of curious whether that was something that influenced her at all.
No, you know, I think Hannah was kind of, I think as Hannah's been born with her heart outside of her anyway. You know, I mean, she's ever since she was 8 years old, she's been volunteering and, you know, first at the food bank and then at a restaurant for homeless men and women. And she just kind of lives that way as a, you know, and so I think in this moment, she just got so angered by the disparities. What's funny is when she brought home the her initial, you know, story on this, my wife and I are sitting there saying, well, hon, we do a lot. You know, it's not like we're sitting around while the world is going to hell. I mean, we're, you know, I'm on the Habitat board here in Atlanta, Habitat for Humanity board, and, you know, we're very involved with the food bank, and my wife's been very involved with the United Way, and stuff like that. So it's not like we're sitting around doing nothing.
Right. Kevin, I want to take you back.
You know, challenged us to do more.
Yeah, I want to take you back just a second, because you said this in such a matter-of-fact kind of way. I think people may have missed it. You sold your house. You moved into one half the size. You took half the money that you got from the house, I guess, assuming that there's a proportional between the amount of money you spend and the size of the house. But so you took a lot of money.
Yeah.
How much money was that?
It was over $800,000.
That you gave away or that you received?
Yeah, that we gave away.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Look, we all have to take a deep breath. Okay, $800,000. What did you even how did you begin to think about what to do with that? I mean, that's a bunch of money.
Well, it's interesting because my wife's a school teacher, and she looked around for a good book that would lay out how does a family go and invest $800,000 or any kind of resource to make change in the world, and couldn't find anything she really liked. So she basically invented a process for our family, and it went something like this. We would get together, three or four Saturdays a month, and we would talk about the big issues of the world, and it, you know, everything from lack of clean water, lack of education, the environment, women's rights, racism, sexism, about everything you can think of, and where could we plug in, what was important to us, and where could we plug in. And as we did that, sort of a fascinating thing happened. You know, I think if we were just a family that had given away a bunch of money, this would be mildly interesting. But what our book really focuses on and what we want to spend more of our time talking about is how this transformed our family. Because what happened was, during this process, trying to figure out where to invest the money, our family started to understand each other better. We started to learn a lot more about each other's values and, you know, what really mattered and what was important to each other and that kind of thing. And so it actually completely transformed the relationships within our family.
Do you have other kids?
I have one other son.
How old is he?
And he is 2 years younger than Hannah. So he is now 16. Hannah's now 18.
So what was his take on this whole thing?
He thought we were nuts.
Probably most of the adults you knew thought you were nuts.
That is absolutely true. In this whole story, Joseph is absolutely the most rational one. And, you know, he became our family skeptic, because we jokingly like to refer to him as our peer review committee. You know, and we knew that in order to make decisions, we were not going to go forward unless we were unanimous. We made that decision
from
the very beginning.
Let me just take you back, because I'm just fascinated by this whole thing. I think I'm honestly, I hate to say, sounds so superficial, but probably unlikely to do the kind of thing that you guys are doing, at least on that kind of a scale. But take me through some of the discussions that must have happened. I mean, I can't imagine that your wife would listen to this and say, "Are you out of your mind?" Or maybe I'm just imagining that I know her better.
So the initial night at the dinner table, Hannah comes to us and she says, "You know, this is really wrong. I don't want to be a family that just talks about making a difference in the world. I want to be out there making a real difference, even if it's a small difference." And Joan, you know, quickly tells her about all the things we do, and you know, and all the checks we write at Christmas time, and that we're generous. And I'm looking over in Hannah's face, and she's got this look on her face that's like, this is the lamest junk I've ever
right.
heard in my life.
Yeah, right. As only a teenager can do. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, thank you for making me feel like I'm an idiot, right? And and Joe is barely paying attention at that point, because it's just, you know, he's interested in the story about the Mercedes and the homeless man and that kind of thing, but he doesn't think this is really going anywhere. And then when my wife pushes back and says, you know, what do you want to do, sell the house, you know, give up your room? And Hannah completely transforms into this kid who's like, yeah, heck yeah, this is the answer. And, you know, and now Joe wakes up, you know, and he's like,
wait a second,
yeah. Hold on a sec, we're giving up what? We're selling what? And, you know, it was a perfectly rational decision. I will say, I was shocked at that moment too, but I know Joan better, you know, than Joseph does, and so I sort of understood where she was coming from. I didn't at that point actually think that we were really going to go forward with it, and I know Joe didn't either for months.
Mm-hmm.
Until we actually, you know, had multiple more conversations
right.
about, you know, whether this actually made sense. Do we need everything that we have?
Kevin Salmon is the co-author with his daughter Hannah Salmon of The Power of Half, One Family's Decision to Stop Taking and Start Giving Back. We're going to take a quick break. As soon as we come back, we will continue the amazing story of the Salmon family.
Hey, parents! Introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. He weighed 1 pound, 7 ounces. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His brain wasn't ready. At the hospital, the nurses said Daniel was a fighter, and they would do all they could to help him. The doctor said even with the best care, Daniel may never walk. He may never see. He may never learn. Daniel's parents spent night after night at the hospital, watching his every breath, holding his tiny hands, and looking for signs that he was growing stronger. At home, his parents looked around Daniel's empty nursery, at the quiet toys and the still rocker, and they hoped that one day they could sit in that rocking chair and tell this story to their very healthy son. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year, but there's hope for a happy ending. The March of Dimes is funding the research and programs to stop premature birth. You can help bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. We're continuing our discussion with Kevin Salwin, who is the co-author with his daughter Hannah of The Power of Half, One Family's Decision to Stop Taking and Start Giving Back. So we were talking a little bit about the discussions that began at the that happened at the very beginning of this whole thing. Did Hannah ever backpedal a little bit and say, you know, I kind of was thinking, I mean, because you've got months between the time that she decides she wants to do this and signing the escrow papers, selling your house, right? So was there an attempt to back out or to maybe do something on a smaller scale?
Never from Hannah.
Wow.
You know, Joan and I always knew that if things went really awry, we could back out. And Joseph always hoped that we would. and tried a couple of different strategies. Like, for example, he tried to parlay the move to the smaller house into an extra playroom for himself.
Okay.
You know, and none of those things worked. You know, but I think you put your finger on something that's really important. You know, what happened at that moment, both with the homeless man and the Mercedes, and then at the dinner table, was that Hannah had put a speed bump in front of our family. As we were kind of hurtling through our lives in I think a fashion that's very common, which is, you know, you work to earn money, you earn money to spend money, and you're always trying to keep up with everybody around you, either consciously or subconsciously. And we were right in the middle of that. You know, it was always, somebody has a nice flat screen TV, or somebody has new clothing,
sure,
those kinds of things. And we were right in the middle of all that. Somebody's taking a nice vacation, so I got to do that. And so we're not anti-consumer, but at the same time, it was damaging our relationship as opposed to helping our relationship. And I couldn't articulate it at the time, but when Hannah put those speed bumps down in front of us, we could have just gone over them.
Right.
And said, yeah, hey, hon, that's a really nice idea. That's really, you know, the world's a really unfair place. Sometimes we'll do the best we can. We'll volunteer more at the homeless shelter.
Now, is this something you talked about, Kevin, how this transformed your relationships within the family?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I'm kind of curious. I would imagine that it would bring you a lot closer together. You certainly would get to know people in a very different way. But, you know, after the initial shock has worn off and you kind of get used to your smaller house and everything, then what? Well, how did relationships change and how have you developed as a family since then?
Well, twofold. Number one is physically we're in a smaller space. So frankly, we see each other more. We share more spaces. And so when you share spaces, you actually end up having to live together in a way that's pretty healthy, right? Maybe you watch the same television shows as opposed to being in different rooms,
uh-huh,
right? Or maybe you say, okay, well, I'm going to read in this room. Can we turn off the music and maybe you read too? And then I'll look up and I'll say, hey, Joe, I read something interesting in the paper. And we'll have a conversation about that. You know, so it's little moments, you know, that kind of accumulate into a deeper relationship. Now, the other piece of it is kind of the bigger stuff. You know, for example, as we were going through this process on where to invest our money, you know, when Joe finally came around, he said, well, why don't we just go back to the original homeless man and maybe one or two people like him and invest all of our money in those people to help them get their lives right, you know? And I said, well, Joe, that's a kind of a big, hairy idea. And he said, well, that's the kind of ideas I like, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I didn't know, but now I do.
Huh, that's interesting. That is really interesting. So what did you end up doing with it? I'm sort of, my mind is kind of reeling here, just thinking you start a foundation. I mean, you have to pick something that's a bit of a niche. You can't just go find 800,000 homeless people and give them a buck a piece.
Well, you could, I guess.
You could, but then
I wouldn't say it'd be a very effective strategy.
Then the whole thing about teaching a man to fish, though, you know, that's...
Yeah, well, We work with an organization called the Hunger Project.
Okay.
We made a decision fairly early on. I'm thinking about 3 months in, that we decided we wanted to work on world poverty issues, and we knew that with our even with an amount of money that's large, and we admit that, it's not large enough to really make a dent. But so what we figured we would do is we would go after helping a finite group of people help themselves out of poverty.
Okay.
And so we found an organization that has become our great teammate in this. It's called the Hunger Project, and it's a nonprofit based out of New York that works in Africa, India, Bangladesh, and Mexico. And so we are working in Ghana, Africa, helping villagers move from poverty to self-reliance.
Now, Kevin, is this something that you kind of endowed a chair or endowed a foundation so that there's going to be an ongoing thing, or are you just kind of slowly burning through the whole $800,000 and then when it's gone, it's gone?
The Hunger Project, it's somewhere in the middle, actually. The Hunger Project does a very patient 5-year program that helps villagers move from poverty to self-reliance. And so we have, we are investing money in 2 sets of villages.
Okay.
So we have a 5-year program in each set of villages that we are funding.
So when you call up the Hunger Project and you say, hey, we'd like to send you guys some money, did they think there was an extra 0 or 2 on there when they got a check?
You know,
I mean, it's probably a donation that's a little out of their everyday range of collections.
Yeah, you know, but they're used to seeing large amounts. But you know, we had talked to them ahead of time. We talked
okay.
to all we shrunk it down to 4 organizations that we were looking at that all deal with global poverty, and we went and actually interviewed them. So they knew what we were talking about, and you know, they, like a lot of organizations, they get large bequests. But I really want to make a point here, and that is, you know, we're talking about large numbers. I know that, and especially we're talking about large numbers within our family's net worth. But the cool thing that we've learned as we've moved along on this is that size actually doesn't matter. You know, what really matters is that we all have more than enough of something in
mm-hmm.
our lives.
Yeah.
And in our case, it was our house. We had more house than we needed. The furnishings in it, the stuff that was in it, we just had more than we needed. And, you know, for other people, what they might have more than enough of is something completely different. You know, the simplest thing that I could offer you is, you know, the average American watches 140 hours of television a month. You know,
God, that's awful.
Let's say you just took a piece of that. You know, let's say you just watch 6 hours of TV a day. Take one day of your week, just one day, and cut the number of hours you watch TV in half. Now you're down to 3 hours. You have this brand new resource of 3 hours that you can go read to kids, you know, in a
yeah.
school.
Yeah.
You can go clean up your neighborhood park. Whatever is your passion, but we all have more than enough of something in our lives.
You know, that's interesting. You got to a point I was just about to ask you, which was, you know, your story is very inspiring. It's probably a little bit intimidating, where people are going to say, "Well, I could just never do that." But I think that what you're talking about, that we all have something, and even if it's a couple hours a week or even a couple hours a month, it's better than nothing.
Can I tell you something?
Absolutely.
We have started to build Power of Half schools in inner city communities here in Atlanta, and we are teaching kids who come from nothing. They come from nothing. You know, these are kids without parents. These are kids without. You know, most of them have no dad in their lives. They've lived for all of their lives from a position of scarcity. And what we're teaching them is, actually, wait a second, you have lots of stuff. You have resources and assets that the world needs.
Hmm.
And the concept is, you can feel powerful, you can feel really useful in the world if you're out there giving part of what you have.
Yeah. Kevin Salwin, the co-author with Hannah Salwin, who's his daughter, of The Power of Half, One Family's Decision to Stop Taking and Start Giving Back. And would you recommend people go to the Hunger Project website and take a tool around, or what would you suggest
absolutely.
For people?
We love the Hunger Project. That site is THP, thepowerofhalf.org, or they can come to our site, which is thepowerofhalf.com, and there's lots of information on there, too.
Excellent. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It kind of freaks me out that some people actually go through their trash to pull out recyclables. That's not for me.
Maria Inez Phillips talks about not recycling.
I've got too many newspapers and magazines and catalogs in there with plastic containers and bottles and cans.
In your recycling bin?
No, in my trash.
Your trash can is full of recyclables?
No, it's full of trash.
You say trash, Maria. I say rubbish.
Whatever it is, I'm not going through it. I don't even know what they do with recyclables.
They make more of the things you use, Maria. More newspapers, more bottles and cans.
Out of a bunch of trash? I just don't get it.
Some things are very obvious, Maria. Recycling creates jobs and protects the environment. Is that important to you?
It is, which is why I put my trash where it belongs.
Learn the difference between trash and recycling and more on our website, yougottabekidding.org.
I put out way too much trash to think about recycling.
See why recycling is not rubbish. Visit yougottabekidding.org today.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Today's dads are expected to be there for the birth of their kids and pretty much everything else, but that doesn't mean they necessarily want to. Let's talk about that in today's email. Dear Mr. Dad, my wife is 6 months pregnant and she just signed the two of us up for a childbirth prep class at the hospital where our baby will be born. The problem is that while she's all excited about the class, I have no interest at all. Don't get me wrong, I'm excited about becoming a dad and I want to be there to support her and everything, but I've heard from a number of my friends that they don't feel particularly welcome in the class and that the entire focus was on the mom-to-be. Should I just suck it up and go to the class even though I don't want to? In a sentence, yeah, suck it up. Your friends are right. The focus of childbirth prep classes is definitely on the expectant mom. More on that in just a sec. And there's a good chance that you won't feel welcome. But there's an even better chance that your wife will never forgive you if you bail on the class. In her mind, there's a direct connection between how much she feels you love her and how much interest you have in being a dad. And while to you, your excitement level about your impending fatherhood and taking or not taking a prep class are completely separate issues, to her, they are one and the same. Now, back to the focus of the class. One of the problems I've had with childbirth education over the years is that it is entirely too much mom-focused. No question, delivering a baby is something we, as guys, will never quite understand, and I'm okay with that. But the reality is that psychologically, your transition to parenthood is just as profound as your wife's. Your life is going to be turned upside down as much as hers. In fact, one could argue that your transition is even harder. She has so much more social support than you do. Unfortunately, that important bit of information is too often overlooked, which is exactly why I wrote my book, The Expectant Father, Facts, Tips, and Advice for Dads-to-Be, and did a DVD called Toolbox for New Dads, both of which focus on men and how they are affected by pregnancy, birth, and beyond. The solution? Well, first slap a smile on your face and then grab your calendar and block out the next 6 to 8 days that those classes are going to last. You are not going to be alone. In my research, most expectant dads who take prep classes with their partner do so for her. Interestingly, a recent study in Sweden reached the same conclusion. Second, sign up for a dad-only class. I've been teaching seminars for expectant fathers for years, and I can assure you that having a woman in the room completely changes the dynamics. Guys aren't nearly as open about discussing the things they really want to know about, their fears, their worries, their concerns, which is why every time an expectant mom wants to sit in on the class, I very gently ask her to leave. If your hospital doesn't offer a dad-only class, the DVD I mentioned is a great alternative. Third, read everything you can possibly get your hands on about labor and delivery. You need to know what labor looks like, how long it typically lasts, how you can best help your wife through it, and what kinds of things typically go wrong. And there's always something. The medication options she has, who all those people are and why they're running in and out of your room, and again, what you can do if there's a plan B or C or D. Hey, if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, or something else that's just burning in you that you'd love to talk to us about here at Positive Parenting, please do drop us a line through our website. That's MrDad.com/radio. We do read every single letter that comes in, and you may get your answer right here on the air.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.